So what do you think your superpower is?
Yeah, so it seems to be the thing that I realized I was good at over the years is I can get anyone to work better together, to enjoy their job more, and to be more productive. And that kind of comes down to company culture. So I've realized over the years that as CEO of Blue Compass, my number one purpose is to make our mission and our values known to our team members, to live them out myself, and to help our team members do the same. And I realize if we can create just an incredible culture where people enjoy coming to work, where they have fun, where they're not looking over their shoulder because someone's going to take their credit, where they feel really supported by their team members, where they're not afraid to fail, where failure isn't a bad thing.
Heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, to everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell, from the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what, I can fix that. I can help people. I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1.
Hello and welcome back to the Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have the pleasure of having Drew Harden on the line. Drew, are you there?
I'm right here.
Awesome. Glad to have you here, Drew. I know we were just talking. You're coming in from Des Moines, Iowa. Is that right?
That's right. Right in the center of the country.
So right smack dab in the middle of the Midwest. We were just talking before we got here. That's where I was a couple of weeks ago. We should have done the interview a few weeks ago, but man, it was ever cold there. It was like, I had been told, and I knew this because I went to college in Missouri, but the Midwest has a bipolar like disorder for the weather. And one day we were there, it was 27 degrees and snowing. And then the next day it was 80. And then the next day it was hailing. So hopefully you guys have started to warm up a bit. But man, that springtime in the Midwest is killer.
Yep. That spring in the Midwest for you. It always plays with our hearts here because it's like it finally starts to get warm and everyone puts shorts on. Everyone gets super pumped. And then it goes back to snow and ice. And then it gets warm again. There's always a fake spring. Back and forth. It's gotten to the point now. Today's actually really nice. It's sunny and it's like 70 degrees outside. So that's pretty nice. But yeah, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, we did Easter over there. And I was like, it was the day before Easter, it was 27 degrees. And I was like, we're not going to be able to do egg hunting with the kids outside if it's 27 degrees.
Yeah, it doesn't hold a lot of Iowans back. They still do it.
Yeah, I know. They were all fine. They were like, it's fine. It's not that cold. And I'm like, listen, I know the freezing temperature of water is 32, but the freezing temperature of Richard is 65. So...
Right.
You know, that comes from being a desert baby out in Southern California.
Yeah, it's very different.
Yeah. So what I want to do before we get too far into the interview is go over just a brief introduction to who you are so our audience knows who you are. And then we'll just dive into your story. So Drew is the CEO and founder of Blue Compass. And you've grown the company from a two-person startup all the way back in 2007 to one of Midwest's leading digital marketing companies. He's a published author, speaks at conferences around the country. He's been cited by publications like USA Today, serves clients like Spalding Sports Equipment, Napa Auto Parts, and the NFL. Let's start off with what you're known for, right? So this question, you know, it really helps set up who you are and what your business is like. So I want to find out, what is it that you guys do? Who do you do it for? And essentially, what's your main offering in the marketplace?
So Blue Compass exists to give good organizations a clear direction for their online presence. And we do that through web design, development, and digital marketing, specifically things like search engine optimization, which we're really good at. So when people ask us what we do, a lot of times I'll say, you know, we spend each and every day getting more qualified users to come to our clients' websites and then getting them to convert on those websites. Or in other words, undertake the action that our client wants them to take, whether that's filling out a form or purchasing a product or signing up for an event or just spending time on the website, whatever that might be. So that's how we spend our time. And yes, we're a digital agency and we have a full team of developers and digital marketers and designers, account executives, et cetera.
Nice. So do you guys do like the full stack? You help them do the copywriting for their website, help them do the ads for the social networks and just like everything in between? Or is it just on the ad side? Like where all do you guys fit?
We do everything for the most part. Yeah. So we're pretty flexible. Sometimes our clients want to handle some of it. Sometimes they want us to do all of it and everything in between. But basically, you know, in a perfect scenario, a client will come to us and want to improve their online presence, want to see more results from what they're doing online. And so we'll take a look at their website, see what's working and what's not. We're very data driven. We look at the analytics on their website. Sometimes we'll run like user experience testing, A/B testing and things like that. And then, you know, often we'll just build them a new website. We'll consolidate a lot of their pages on their website. We will try to come up with a really good flow for the way that the visitor should go throughout the website and have really clear call to actions throughout. And then a lot of times we'll write the copy for them, help them with that. We do a lot of keyword research. We look at the words their clients are actually typing into Google and other searches and bringing them to the website. And we'll try to, you know, improve how they rank for those words, just try to get more visibility in Google. A lot of that is done up front when you build the website. Even more of it is done after the site launches. SEO is really a marathon and not a sprint. But we spend a lot of time on that and basically launch a new website and then support it ongoing with digital marketing services. And that usually looks at reviewing their analytics, seeing again what's working and what's not, how can we improve. Often things like Google Ads or social campaigns or things like that. And of course, again, ongoing SEO, continually helping them outrank their competitors for the keywords that really matter.
Nice. So do you only work with big companies like NAPA and the NFL, or do you also work with smaller companies, you know, ones that are, you know, 10, 15 people and, you know, maybe smaller organizations, or you only target the real big companies?
No, not just the big companies. We'll work with smaller companies as well. We're pretty flexible in who we work with. It's usually like a small startup or someone with just a few team members. We typically don't work with real small businesses like that. But up from there, yeah, we'll work with them. We're pretty agnostic when it comes to industry. We work with many different industries. And we've never specialized in one industry just because we really love the flexibility and we love learning from different industries. And that's just always been really good for us. And so, yes, it's very flexible in who we work with and what we do.
Yeah, that's an interesting discussion, actually, because you hear a lot, especially in the build an agency space, because there's a lot of people that want to get into the, you know, having an agency like you or I might have. And they talk about, oh, learn to specialize in one agency or in one industry. And you've chosen not to do that. Our company also doesn't do that. We are in lots of different industries. And I'm curious, what do you see the benefits of being a multi-industry agency versus a single industry agency?
I think it's just the ability to learn so much from experience in different industries and then applying those learnings to other businesses and other industries. There's an agency out there, for instance, that maybe they specialize just in banking and they know a lot about banking regulations. And obviously there are some advantages to doing that, but you know, if they work with 200 different banks, they end up starting to do kind of the same thing for a lot of the banks. They repeat themselves. Sometimes there's duplicate copy or duplicate experiences. Whereas, you know, when you work with us, if a bank would come to us, we would really help them stand out from all those same websites and online experiences that agency would be bringing to them. And we do know a lot about the banking industry and many industries, but we never go into a relationship with a client acting like we're 100% the experts in their industry. I think any successful project always requires, you know, a partnership. So we know a lot about the web, we know a lot about digital, and we bring that to the table. But every one of our clients knows more than we do about their business and their industry. And so we are really great at listening. So I think for any agency or any business, the quality of the relationship you have with the client or the quality of your ability just to listen is just as important as the quality of the service that you give to them.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion because I know I've heard a lot of people and I've even been told they're like, hey, you should take your agency because we do podcasting. They're like, you should specialize in one industry. And I'm like, I don't want to specialize in one industry. I see the advantages of doing that, right? And you just mentioned a few of them. Like you can get really smart in that industry and you can really know and speak their language. You can put all your marketing together to really attract that industry. There's a couple of benefits that come with that. But some of the things that I think come from one, being open to lots of industries, just from a business standpoint, you have a much higher like cap on your total addressable market, like almost infinitely so. There's that part that's really just good for business standpoint. And then one of the things that I find interesting is that almost all of your major innovations in any industry come from other industries, knowledge from other industries.
Sure.
And so as we learn what works for podcasting in one industry, we can start applying those learnings in other industries where you have just new different things that work someplace and you can be like, oh, that was cool. Let's see if it works over here. And that's where a lot of your innovation comes. Because like you said, if you're doing the same thing for the same industry over and over again, it really stifles that innovation cycle, I think. And so I think there's a lot of benefits to being a multi-industry agency.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think so too. And another thing, Richard, is if you specialize in one industry, sometimes that industry is going like gangbusters, things are going great. And sometimes that industry is down because industries really fluctuate. And I'm not interested in being stuck to the ups and downs of one industry. I would rather always be up and doing really well. And so when you specialize in different industries, it really helps you diversify. And so if one type of client isn't doing as well, then generally another type of client is doing better. And it helps you level things out a little bit. And I'm extremely interested in giving a great experience to our team. I never want to do layoffs. And there's so many big businesses, Richard, that do layoffs all the time. There's all rumors start going through the company and it hurts the company culture, it hurts the morale. So I think one of the remedies to that is having a business like ours that specializes in many different industries. I think that makes it a little more resilient. And in addition to that, one of the things we work really hard to do is never have one huge client. Yeah. Last year, our number one client was 5.7% of our business. That's very healthy. The next client was like 5.6%, 5.5%. And we have about 250, 300 clients. And I am really proud of that. We worked really hard to do that. I remember years ago, Richard, we had a client that was like 50% of our business. And that was extremely unhealthy because if that client leaves or cuts back, it really hurts the business. I'm aware of a really big agency right now and they had a client cut back. I mean, there's so many big agencies out there and they'll have clients of like 30% of their business. I just don't think that's very healthy. So we're really committed not to do that for many reasons, but the main one is we don't ever want to have to do layoffs.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And one of the things that we're actually actively working on rebuilding our project management system and sort of like the operating system behind our company. And one of the dashboards that I'm putting together is a dashboard for our revenue and how many people that revenue supports dinner around the table for.
Yeah. Right?
A much larger number than our number of employees. That's the number that I think about all the time. And I was like, because it's not just my project manager's got a husband and two daughters and an aunt and everything. Like, it's like every single person on our team, their paycheck is putting food on the table for multiple people. And so I have like the same kind of thing where I'm like, I don't want to lay off people. And even when it comes to firing, I'm like, unless you've got some sort of an integrity issue or where you don't actually show up and do the work that you're supposed to do, if we've got you in the wrong role, we'll find a better role for you. That's the way we like to look at our company, because I think, and it ties back into having that multi-industry agency too, with all the different work that our staff gets, they're not doing the same thing over and over again. Even if they are doing the same like type of work regularly, because that's what their role involves, they're getting to hear new information from new industries and learn new things. And anyways, I find that fascinating. Whereas we have this right now, one of our large segments of our business is actually like the legal space. So we have a lot of legal podcasts and like our staff would be like, I don't want to be assigned to like too many of these. I want to get because we got several industries. Like I want to, maybe a couple of legal podcasts, a few other ones, because they're like, I've got to listen to these and do my work on them. It's nice to have like differences and hear different things and different stories and different spaces and whatnot. So there's team happiness benefits that come along with being a multi-industry company.
Keeps it interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally agree. Well, and like you said, I mean, I think so many companies use layoffs as a way to be financially sound, to help their, profits for the next quarter and everything. And, laying a person off, like looking at them as a unit of production, I don't think is the right way to do it. I mean, people are people. And I think there's very few instances in which a layoff is a good solution. When we were a younger company, years ago, we definitely ran into a couple places where we weren't doing as well financially as we should have been. And in those cases, my business partner and I reduced our salary to help us get through it. I think that's what great leadership does. Great leadership looks to other solutions before layoffs.
Yeah, we're actually actively going through that right now because we're scaling up for growth. And so we had to hire people on in order to be able to have the resources available for growth. But like that has like timelines, right? So it's like you have to hire the resources, which reduces your profitability or reduces your top line revenue. And then you have to spend to bring in the business before you realize the profit on that. And I was like, so where does that come from? For now, because of the size company we are, let's reduce my salary.
Yeah.
That's where the space comes from.
That's super difficult to do too as a leader, but also I think it shows your character to be able to do that, at least for the time being, while you continue to get more profitable and everything. Because not a lot of leaders will do that.
Well, I mean, I don't really know what another way to do it. That's how I want to run my company. But at the same time, too, like we're in that process of trying to reduce the amount of the percentage of each client in our business. And for us, because we have a standard process that we run everyone through, the only lever we have to pull on there is adding more clients in. So as we add more clients in, their percentage of a whole drops. And so I'm probably, I don't know, we're probably 10 or 15 new clients away from us having like every client being 5% or less, which is my goal.
Yeah, that's great. Love it.
So yeah, I love all of that. It sounds like we're a little bit behind where you guys are, but it's an interesting path to drive a business down. And one of the things I'm learning as we're growing too, is like every single stage we hit, it's like a whole new level of problems you have to learn how to solve and learn how to, you know, how to build things and like resources for it. I'm like, we're like on the third one of those stages now. I refer to it as, it's like, you know, like you're raising a child. You got like the infant stage for your business. And then you have the child, the toddler stage and the child stage and the teenager stage. We're like preteen stage for our business. I couldn't leave my business at a home alone with like access to the cooking stuff. They light the house on fire. But like, I'm working on getting them to late teenager stage so they can like take care of themselves. But anyways, as we go through those stages, I'm like, oh, this never ends. Every stage you get to in your business, there's new sets of problems and new things to learn and figure out.
Correct.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I want to dive in a little bit and talk about your origin story, right? Every good comic book hero has an origin story. It's the thing that made you into the hero you are today. And we want to hear that. Were you born a hero, or were you bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to start a marketing agency all the way back in 2007? Or did you start in a job and eventually move on to becoming an entrepreneur? Basically, where'd you come from?
Definitely not born a hero. I don't know many people that are. It takes a lot of work and learning and mentorship and trials and things like that to become a leader and a good entrepreneur and things like that. But basically, I started working in an agency when I was 19. I was an intern, and I was a graphic designer and animator at first. And I just learned a lot about the, you know, experience of an agency serving different clients and had a really good time. I was hired at this agency when I graduated from college and really enjoyed it. When I started there, there's just a great culture and really fun people, and it was a great experience. And so I worked there for about 3 years after college. So including my internship through college, about 6 years total, and met my wife there. Again, had an overall great experience. And towards the end of that initial 3 years, so I'm like 25, started noting the culture degrading a bit. It was starting to get toxic in many areas. And that really bothered me because I just wanted to have a fun, positive experience every time I was in the office. And in addition to this, this was primarily a video production company. And they focused a lot on video. And I was really getting to the point where I loved digital, Richard. I really loved the web. And I wanted to focus more on that area. So I had just been talking about this and a little frustrated. And my wife just said to me one day, you know, like, why don't you start your own place? And I thought, you know, that's a good idea. I would really love to do that. I think I had that entrepreneurial heart. I tried to start a business a couple of times before and it didn't really work. And so I decided to do so, and I didn't really know much at all back then. I really didn't, but I knew enough to know I didn't know enough. So I had that going for me. At least I wasn't too pompous about my skills or anything like that. So one of the guys I worked with named Carrie, he had a lot more experience when it came to the web and digital and things like that. So I asked him if he wanted to start a business with me where we could just do digital all the time. And he said, no, my wife's pregnant. This is our first kid. I can't leave this job. It's a good one. And I thought, you know, that's really reasonable. I can't fault him for that. But I'm pretty persistent. So I just kept asking him. And finally, one day he had a bad day, I think. And he said, let's give this a shot. So we ended up quitting our jobs and we started an agency called Blue Compass, which is where I am today. And we never had any funding. We never had an amazing business plan or anything like that. Both of our wives were pregnant with both of our first children. So it was really a huge risk. And people always ask me like, wow, weren't you scared? And I tell them I wasn't scared. I was never scared. This was never a scared or intimidating thing to go through. And it's not because I'm smart or wise or knew what I was doing, because I didn't. It was just because, Richard, I was so passionate about this. I really wanted to start this digital marketing business. I really wanted to do it. And it taught me that when your passion outweighs your fear, you can really do incredible things. And that's really what got me through that whole experience. So we ended up starting Blue Compass, and little by little, we were building websites. This was back in 2007. We got a couple clients, eventually able to move into an office, hired a few more clients. We started getting into digital marketing and SEO and things like that. And we hired team members and slowly grew and moved into a new office. And anyway, over the years, we grew more and more. And so here we are today. And we have a team of 36, and we get to work with amazing clients all over the country and around the world. I'm really thankful. It's been a wonderful ride. There's certainly been ups and downs along the way, but I'm really thankful for where we are now. And it's been a blessing along the way to hire people who are more talented than I, who know what they're doing. And so I can get out of the way and let them do their thing.
That's a really cool story. Timeline is similar for me. I graduated college in 2007 and started my first, I will loosely call it a digital marketing agency. I was helping, you know, local businesses like build their mobile websites and use QR codes in their print marketing and stuff like that way back in the day. It was before it was like a normal thing. And I was doing that. You know, I mentioned my best friend. He started a similar thing. We were working together doing some things. We never started a business together. One of the things I found really interesting to me was like I got through the first from like 2007, 2012. I got to the point where I was like really good at the digital marketing thing and realized I was really bad at business. And so we do things like I didn't price myself well. I didn't know how to hire people. I didn't know how to keep marketing going once you got projects going. So you would do the whole feast famine thing. Like all the things outside of the actual digital marketing, which was the service I delivered, I was bad at. And so in 2012, I was like, I need to shut this agency down and go learn some things. So I shut my agency down and essentially I gave my clients all warning. I was like, hey, a couple of months here, I'm going to continue doing this work, but I need to shut the agency down because I need to go and learn how to be a business person. Otherwise, I'm never going to succeed because it was like flatline for 5 years. You could only do a couple of things because I didn't know what I was doing. And so I took all of my marketing knowledge that I had and used it to get a very high-end, like C-level marketing director position for a local company. And I was like, I wanted a couple of things. I wanted access to the president or founder of the company so I could mentor under them. And I wanted a ginormous marketing budget that I could hone my skills with. And I wanted to have access to team members and some of the other things that like I needed to like learn those skills. And so I shut my marketing agency down on December 28th of 2012. And by February 4th of the next month, I had a six-figure C-level marketing director position, beat out 250 other people for it. And I didn't have any of the qualifications. And it's just because marketing, essentially, learn how to use the job stuff as marketing. And for the next 2 years, 10x'd that company's lead flow and some other things. But like for me, it wasn't the marketing stuff that I was interested in because I knew how to do that. What I wanted was every week I sat down with the president of the company and what were the decisions he was making and why. And they just happened to also have a board of directors. And on the board of directors was, what do you call him, the chairman of the board? He was an ex-Microsoft guy and was on the board of like 12 different companies. And this company was like chump change to him. So like I got to sit with him every couple of weeks and I spent 15 months just every week mentoring with these people and learning what it looked like to actually be good as a businessman and not just as a delivery of marketing services, and started my agency up after that. So that was how I got into the agency world.
Very cool. I love your focus on just learning. So many of us miss that, especially when we're younger.
Well, I mean, it was obvious to me because I sucked at it. I was like, wow, I'm really bad at this and I don't know how to learn it. And this is the only way I know how to learn it. So that's what I did. And so far, it's been really helpful. And I still look back on a lot of those lessons now as we're going and growing, especially as our team is growing. It's been really fascinating. So I'm going to switch gears then and talk a little bit about your superpowers. Right? Every iconic hero has a superpower, whether that's your fancy flying suit made by your genius intellect or the ability to call down thunder from the sky or super strength if you're Superman. In the real world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with or you developed over the course of your career that really energize all the rest of your skills. And so the way I like to frame that for my guests, if you look at all the skills you've developed over the course of your career here, there's probably a common thread that ties all those skills together. And that common thread is where you'd find your superpower. So what do you think your superpower is?
Yeah. So it seems to be the thing that I realized I was good at over the years is I can get anyone to work better together, to enjoy their job more, and to be more productive. And that kind of comes down to company culture. So I've realized over the years that as CEO of Blue Compass, my number one purpose is to make our mission and our values known to our team members, to live them out myself, and to help our team members do the same. And I realize if we can create just an incredible culture where people enjoy coming to work, where they have fun, where they're not looking over their shoulder because someone's going to take their credit, where they feel really supported by their team members, where they're not afraid to fail, where failure isn't a bad thing necessarily, it really enables people to do a great job and to not worry and to just have fun at work. So I think that's probably my superpower, just enabling people to work better together, to enjoy their work, and just fostering a great company culture.
So I'm going to very selfishly use this as coaching Richard session, because I am actively realizing that my most important role as a CEO is to help build and develop the culture. And I know one of the things we do is like every company meeting, we actually read our company values off. And one of them is actually about, you know, mistakes are stepping stones to success as long as we don't repeat them kind of thing, right? So failure is a portion of what we do. Yep. So I'm curious, tactically, what are some of the actual things you do regularly, like today, that are culture impact work for like your role as a CEO?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually wrote a book about this last year. It's called Retain. So when it comes to culture, as a leader, as a CEO especially, the number one thing you can do is define your values, your company values, make them known, live them out yourself, and help your team members do the same. So at Blue Compass, years ago, when we started, we had a fantastic company culture. Everything was great. And then when we hit 2012, we actually got a really big client. And we doubled in size from 8 people to 16 people overnight. And that was the first time, Richard, that I ever noticed some gossip creeping in, some drama creeping in. It was the first time I was just absolutely shocked that our culture wasn't fantastic. And I realized that the power of my personality isn't enough to foster a great company culture. You have to be really purposeful about it. You have to have a plan. You have to work on it a little bit every day. And I think a lot of companies think great company culture is a ping pong table and beer on Fridays. That's not a company culture. A ping pong table is not a company culture. So your company culture is the sum of the values, the interactions, and the leadership that you experience every day. It's how you feel in the office. It's how you feel when you log on every day. So values is the first step. So many companies have core values, but people might not know what they are. They're not visible. So in my book, one of the first things I talk about is the importance of visible values. Choosing values that are really a good fit for your team. They're also a little aspirational. And then your leaders have to exemplify these and talk about these every day. So at Blue Compass, our values are 5 value statements. We're positive. We grow our expertise. We support one another. We give clients our best, and we reject drama and gossip. Those are on our wall. We put them in our proposals. When we pitch new business, it's in our presentations. We talk about them. My team's probably tired of hearing me talk about them all the time. We have a team meeting on Thursday of this week. And when I always lead the team meetings, and I start out by talking about our values and I run through them. And so I'll say, we are positive. I mean, everyone knows them. Everyone can say them by heart, but I still have them behind me on a slide. We are positive. And then I'll say, Hannah, what's an example you saw in the last couple of weeks of someone being positive? And I'll just shout out someone. I give them a heads up ahead of time. And I ask for an example from 5 different people. And the example is illustrative. They tell a little story. Hannah will say, oh, you know, I saw Jordan being extremely positive the other day because I was struggling with this and she came over and helped and she did this. So you get examples of them every day. It's a great way to shout someone, you know, give someone a shout out for following the values. And it just keeps them top of mind. A lot of leaders catch people doing things wrong. I'm more interested in catching people doing things right. And you get what you focus on. So if you can emphasize, you know, when someone really does something right, it's a great way to encourage them and others to do the same.
I love that. We do the same thing on our company meetings. We do them every other week. And I always start the meeting off just reading through our company values. I need to do some stuff where we're like doing some of the examples. My ops person and I were just talking about this the other day where we're like, hey, maybe we put together like a little competition of best example of this or best example of this every time we do a company meeting that like we give out an Amazon gift card or something like that. And it's funny, if I ever don't start the company meetings off by reading the company values, my team is like, wait a second here, put on the brakes, where are the company values? We got to start there. It's become a thing that they all look forward to. And one of the things that I've noted, because I don't know how you measure culture. I don't know what your KPI is, you have a good culture or not. So the only thing that I've come up with and what I've been keeping track of is anytime we put out a new job role, we let our team know. It's like, hey, we got a new opening for a position. We let our team know. And when they're fighting over themselves to refer their friends and family and community to come work for us, I feel like we're doing a good job. And if we ever get to the point where they're like, we put up a new job role and our team is not looking to invite someone from their community to come be a part of what we're doing, then we have a problem. But again, I don't know any other way to put a KPI behind your culture.
Yeah, that's a great question. We have actually talked about that here, and I don't have a perfect answer for exactly the metric with how to measure your culture because it's very ethereal. And if you don't want to be so data-driven about it, I think that laughter is one of the best metrics of a healthy culture. And thankfully, we have it here in abundant supply. and how long people spend time just chatting with each other and small talking and laughing together. I think that's a sign of a great company culture. Obviously, retention is a pretty strong sign of how good your company culture is. You can easily do like surveys of team members about how good your culture is. We're very relationship driven here. I think one of the things too, Richard, that leaders can do is ensure that managers are really good about their one-on-ones. I think everyone should be having a one-on-one with the person to whom they report very regularly, at least once every couple of weeks, if not every week, even just for a half an hour. And good leaders listen. Good leaders are great listeners. They don't listen to respond, they listen to understand. And that's one of the things we try to do here too. So I think if you're really in tune with your team members, if you're spending time with them, if you're listening to them, if you're the number one leader and you know you have a larger team, you don't have time to listen to all of them, but that's what your managers are for. That's what your C-suite, your VPs and everything are for. But good leaders are listeners. And I think if you're in tune and you're really listening to your team members, you can tell what the culture is.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I need to pick up a copy of your book too, so we'll get a link to it on our show notes. Do you have it in audiobook version? That's my preferred consumption for books.
Yep.
It's on Audible. It's on my website too. There's links to all of it, which is just drewharden.com.
Sweet. We'll make sure that gets them the links too, because it is actively one of the biggest things on my priority list as a CEO is like, okay, I need to figure out how to get this culture thing figured out. And yeah, I like the name book too, Retain, because our longest standing employee has been with us for like 13 years. Like they were a project VA for a long time. And then when we offered them a full-time position, they were like, absolutely, I'll take it. Right. And I was like, I feel like it's a good display of how you're doing with your culture is how long you retain your talent.
It really is. These days, I remember my parents' generation, I mean, people would stay at their job for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, maybe even 40 years. And today, you know, the average amount of time that someone in the United States stays at a job is 4 years. And amongst younger people in their 20s, it's 3 years. It's a lot shorter. It's kind of sad. I mean, I dream of a world where people view Mondays the same as they do Fridays. And it's a wonderful blessing to find a great job that you love. It can give you purpose. It can help you grow financially, but also personally. It can give you great friends and community. It's a wonderful thing. It's not bad to leave and go to a different job, but it is a wonderful blessing to have a team that's been together, that knows each other really well. I think that's just an incredible thing. I love that you have someone on your team that's been there 13 years. That's incredible.
It's an interesting thing. As someone who's growing a company, the things that you think you are going to focus on when you start, like when I first started, I used to think that like, man, revenue was cool. And from revenue, profit. And then like from there, it's like, how many clients are we serving? And like that kind of stuff. And now like the metrics that I care about are like, are my staff staying with me? Are they excited to invite their friends when we have new job positions opening? And like I mentioned before, like how many mouths are we feeding with our revenue? Like those are the numbers that matter to me now. And it's funny because I never even thought about those things before I hired my first staff member.
Yeah, I hear you.
It's amazing how you, I don't know what you call them, your priorities change as your company grows.
Yeah, well, when I started, I thought I would spend a lot of time with websites and digital marketing. And obviously that's a big part of what we do. But for me, you know, the emphasis is more on people and culture.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk about the flip side of your superpower, right? So every superhero has their fatal flaw, just like Superman has his kryptonite and Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad. You probably had a flaw that held you back in your business, something that you struggled with. For me, it was perfectionism for a long time, kept me from like shipping product because I always tweak it just a little bit more before we went live with it. And then you never go live with anything. And then one of the other ones I struggled with was lack of self-care, which really came out in not having good boundaries with my clients, not having good boundaries with my time. I used to think it was good to work 18 hours a day. That's terrible, by the way. You don't get anything done. But I think more important than the flaw is how have you worked to overcome it so that you can actually continue to grow your business? And I think sharing your story a little bit will help our listeners learn from your experience.
I think my biggest flaw, Richard, was not being purposeful about my learning. And throughout my 20s, again, I started Blue Compass when I was very young, but throughout my 20s and maybe even into my early 30s, I wasn't really active in my learning. And I think there's two ways you can learn. One is from mistakes and the other is from mentors. Mentors is the smarter way to learn. You can learn from an individual. I mean, if you can read from a book or learn from a podcast, if you can find a book that someone's written where they distill 30 years of wisdom, you know, of the mistakes, the blood, sweat, and tears that they have, you can learn from those and avoid those yourself. That's an incredible thing. But I just wasn't very active in that. And so I learned from mistakes. And like I said, when I started, I really wasn't very experienced. I didn't know much of anything. And so I made a lot of mistakes in the early years. I wasn't quite sure what I was doing. I think I made up for that with all the extra hours I worked. I think that kind of covered over some of the ground I was losing with all the mistakes. But like you said, that's not particularly sustainable. So finally, I got wise enough to be more purposeful about my learning. And I started reading books. I have a business coach, you know, that I would meet with. And that was very helpful. So I think everyone wins when a leader gets better. And it's very difficult for an organization to ascend much higher than the potential of its leaders. So it's really imperative, you know, if you're a leader of any sort, that you work on yourself, that you manage stress better, that you're more positive, that you become a better listener and a better person. That's really essential.
It's so interesting because I've noticed the same thing. And I don't know that I have a system for this yet, but I've at least been thinking a lot about it. And I know, like, there's a few categories for me that I've found really interesting in the learning, in like just the whole world of learning. One of them for me is that I have to have something I'm actively working on outside of work that's just like a new thing. Things like learning to draw, learning to juggle, learning to play the piano, learning to do carpentry. Like, I built desks and I just built a cutting board a couple weeks ago. So like those kind of things. So I always have something going there that I'm learning something outside of work. Same thing inside of work. What is something that we're actively learning right now, right? I'm in the process of learning JavaScript, not because I have any need to write JavaScript or anything like that, but it's just a skill that I'm learning that has benefits so I can communicate with my team members who do have to write JavaScript and do those things and just understand them. So it's like have something I'm actively learning. That's one, that like one category. And then the other one is having some sort of a mastermind group. Mastermind's an interesting word because there's a lot of different ways to like look at that. I look at it more like having a small group of running partners, people who are running their businesses, doing the same things, maybe different industries than you, whatnot, but they're like, you're invested in each other's outcomes and they're willing to tell you when you're being dumb. And yeah. So like I have a group like that I've met with every single Thursday for 5 years. That has been game changing for me. And then the other one was like you're just saying the mistakes. I made a lot of the mistakes. And what I've realized is that what I need to do is to shortcut all of that. Just hire the people who already know how to do the thing you want to know
sure.
how to do.
Sure.
And then aggressively do everything they tell you to do. And so for me, it was, I want to be better as a CEO. I started doing martial arts with my son. We hired a personal trainer. We meet 4 times a week. I put on 10 pounds of muscle in the last year. That has a big impact on how you can show up and how much energy you have. Same thing. Want to learn how to do cold outreach? Hired a company. Cost 10 grand. I was like, they came in and taught us how to do cold outreach. And now we're doing 20 calls a week that we're booking with cold outreach, stuff like that. And I'm in the process of hiring another company right now that does strategic partnership building. And the same kind of thing. It's going to cost something like 20 or 30 grand. But I'm like, man, you find someone who already knows how to do it, already has the results, and just pay them to shorten the learning curve.
Yeah. Love it. That's smart.
Yeah. Those are my big takeaways from like, man, learning is such a, it's one of those things that you don't think ahead of time, like I'm going to get into this role as a founder or CEO of a company. And like my primary position is going to be, I have to constantly figure out how to make myself better. Yeah. If you want to win, that's how you do it.
Yep. Amen.
So let's switch gears again and talk about your common enemy, right? So every superhero has an arch nemesis, right? It's the thing that they constantly have to fight against in their world. And in the context of this podcast and the world of business, we like to put it in the context of your clients, right? And it's a mindset or a flaw that they come to you with that you or your team has to constantly fight to overcome so that you can actually get them the results that they came to you for. In the world of doing digital marketing for companies, what is that common enemy that you find yourself, either you or your sales staff or your delivery staff, having to constantly fight to overcome?
I think, you know, I'll focus a little more on me personally right now, as maybe this is more of a challenge for me than the team itself, but I would say complacency. You know, there's been a lot of struggles, like I said, over the years. We started from nothing. We never had any funding or backing or debt or anything like that. It's been very organic, our growth, lots of hard work. And it took many, many years. So we're about 17 years old right now. You know, the last number of years, we've really gotten to a great place and the company can really run without me. Things are going smoothly. And when you get comfortable, that's sometimes a danger zone because you can get complacent. And I could get very complacent right now if I wanted to. And so I think that's something for me to watch out for and for us to watch out for. We need to continue to grow. We need to get better. We need to be able to be a bigger blessing to our clients and our team members. And that requires hard work. You know, you can never just stay where you are. You're falling behind or you're moving forward, and we need to continue moving forward. So for me, I think, you know, the risk of comfort and complacency is probably an enemy that I need to continue to fight.
I find that really interesting because I was like, you know, the show Shark Tank.
Yeah.
I know they always use the Shark Tank as a metaphor. It was like, hey, there are sharks coming in and, you know, eating the whatever. And I was like, thought it was interesting because in business, there's a lot like sharks that if you ever stop moving, you die. Right. Sharks mm-hmm. have to constantly move. And it's the same kind of thing. There's lots of different metaphors for it. But like, you know, if the fruit is ripening on the vine, if it stops ripening, then it starts to rot. And you mm-hmm. realize that, like, man, it's just a thing that you constantly have to have going in your business is like, what is the forward movement? And maybe it's growing the team. Maybe it's growing the number of clients. Maybe it's improving the service that you have. Maybe it's improving the culture. And I don't know what it always is, but it's, you always have to have something that you're pushing forward on. And I know for me, at least for the longest time, I used to think it was like, we have to grow the revenue. And you realize that's not the only way to grow. So for you, what are sort of your targets right now with growing Blue Agency? Where are you pushing forward?
I think in every area, it's not just one particular area for us. I think if we can get 1% better every day, every week, every month, in just everything we do, that's really where it's at. We have a digital marketing team. That's one of our departments. How can we continue to become more efficient with the hours that we have? How can we continue to have those team members work better together and learn more and become more knowledgeable in what they do and try new things. So that's how I look at it. It's not necessarily one specific area and one big jump, but it's more like a, what's the 1% we can apply to most everything? That's revenue. How can we continue to be more successful in that area, but also in everything we do, you know, in our relationships with one another, in our cold calls and our outreach, every area.
The richest man in Babylon theory, right? 1% better every day.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So I'm going to talk then about your driving force. If your common enemy is what you fight against, your driving force is what you fight for. Batman fights to save Gotham, or Spider-Man fights to save New York, or Google fights to index and categorize all the world's information. What is it you guys fight for at Blue Witch? What's your mission, so to speak?
Yeah, we really want to, at Blue Compass, we really want to make an impact on our clients' bottom line to help them grow their business so that they can be more of a blessing to their teams, to their followers, to their clients. And I think it's such a great thing when businesses can grow and good businesses can grow, because that enables them to pay their team members better. That's great for their families. They can send their kids to college. They can put food on the table, that sort of thing. Everything that we do, sometimes I try to get across to our team, you're not doing front end development today. You're not, you know, designing a website today. You're not doing keyword research for SEO today. You're growing good organizations. You're helping good organizations get better. You're impacting families. You're making the community better. And that's how we try to look at it, just that impact.
Yeah, I love that. I was doing some research recently on hiring because we're growing. And one of the things I found interesting is that workers, particularly Gen X and younger, which is the overwhelming amount of the workforce at this point, they don't actually value income as the number one thing for a job. It's actually number three. And so it's flexibility, impact, and then income in that order. And so it was interesting to me that impact was generally higher sought than the income. I mean, it's one of those intangibles, and it goes right back to the culture stuff we were talking about before, that if they're going to take time away from their family and their kids and their life and their community, they want to do it for something that's actually going to make a difference, right? Your work is going to have a positive impact on those around you and your community. And so for us, and I think probably everything you've been talking about, like, you have to know how to communicate those things to your team, right? What does our work actually mean for us? Sure, you're editing a podcast, you know, writing a blog, you know, show notes that go along with the podcast episode, but what does it actually mean for the business who's running that, right? They get more impact with their audience. They get more impact with the people that are struggling with problems they help solve, right? You have a ripple effect, right? And the quality of your work matters, and the output of your work has an impact on other people's lives. And we have to communicate that. Otherwise, it's just checkboxes of things they're working on.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. It's a to-do list, and it's difficult for any of us to take a step back and see the big picture. But yeah, I think leaders should help their team members do that.
So I want to talk a little bit about something that's really practical, right? We call this your hero's tool belt. And just like every superhero has a tool belt with awesome gadgets, like their batarangs or their web slingers or their laser eyes, right? Or, you know, big magical hammer like Thor you can spin around and fly with. I want to talk about the top one, maybe two tools that you couldn't live without in your current role as founder of a big company. It could be anything from your notepad to your calendar to your marketing tools, something you use for product delivery, something you think is essential to getting your job done every day. What's a practical tool you couldn't live without today?
Well, I would say one of them would be the Kindle app. Just like I mentioned before, reading, podcasts, things like that. That's pretty big for me. And I try to spend a little time every day reading and just getting a little bit better. I think that's really important for me, and doing so helps me take a step back. And I'm always reading nonfiction. I'm reading inspirational things, things about business, leadership, faith, and things like that. That's important for me, and that can be difficult. I don't know that I like totally enjoy reading, but I make myself do it. And, you know, I read probably 15, 20, 25 books a year, and I'll take notes on it. And at the end of the year, I always put a blog article together that summarizes every book I read, and I rank them in the order of the ones that I like the most. But that's kind of a way to help keep me honest and faithful about keeping up on that reading. And so I think that's one of them. You know, the second one, I don't know if it's a tool or not, but I would say is just prayer. I pray every morning. I feel it's a way to help me be more humble, but I want to connect with God and commit what I do to Him and recognize that He's in charge and I'm not, and ask for blessings on what I do. I want to be a better leader in all that I do, and pray for our clients, pray for our team. I'm pretty much always praying as I walk into our building every morning. So that's another thing. I think those two things are really big for me.
I don't know if it's a suggestion or not, but one of the things that I have learned recently, I've been working on building a knowledge base of my brain in Obsidian, which is a note-taking app. And one of the things that I've learned I can do recently is you can take your Kindle notes, all the highlights that you've had, and you can have it automatically pull all the highlights for a book in. And like, so you have a record of each book and all the highlights from them. I found really useful for exactly what you're talking about, be able to go back through and you can pull out like all the highlights you have from a book.
Cool.
I haven't yet figured out how to do that with Audible yet, because I listen to Audible most of the time. And I'm like, if I can figure out how to like, that was a really cool section, highlighted in Audible, that would be cool. But anyways, I'm not sure if that's a useful thing for you if you keep notes somewhere, but Obsidian's ability to pull in all of your highlight notes has been really an interesting sort of addition to my own reading stuff lately from a practical tool standpoint.
Yeah, well, I guess I should check that out. I highlight it in Kindle, and then I put it into Google Keep manually, which, like what you're saying would save me that step. So maybe I should check it out.
Obsidian is one of those, it's a relational database of all the information you put in it. And so it like interlinks all of your notes like automatically. Mm-hmm. It's really cool, but it's like having a second brain. And so anyways, part of the...
Writing it down.
Yeah, part of the things that like people who are really into Obsidian recommend is like keeping track of like your books and other things that you're writing notes on. There's like terminology for it. Things like you have a map of content and some other things, but the second brain sort of thinking that goes into that. And I found it really interesting because you can pull all your notes in and you'd be like, okay, I want to see all the books that I read this last year. And you pull up a little note and it'll pull all the notes in and put them all in, and you can start like sorting and seeing how all the connections that come together with them. So it's fascinating. I'm not very far into it, but I'm seeing how it could be really beneficial going forward.
Cool. I got to check it out.
Yeah.
Speaking of heroic tools, I want to take a few minutes to tell you about a tool we built that powers the Hero Show and is now this show's primary sponsor. Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. And now, back to the Hero Show.
So one more question for you here before we finish off the interview, and that is your guiding principles. So one of the things that make heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, Batman never kills his enemies. He only ever puts them in Arkham Asylum. So as we wrap up the interview, I want to talk about the top one, maybe two principles that you live your life by, run your business by, maybe something you'd wish you'd known when you started out, you know, Blue Ocean in 2007.
You know, Richard, sometimes people ask me, what's the number one thing you've learned in your time at Blue Compass? And I think the number one thing that I've probably learned is pretty simple, and it's just you become what you think. There's a verse in Proverbs that says, so as a man thinks, so he is. And I really think that's true. I've come to believe that's absolutely true. And there's so many hours that I spent early in our journey here at Blue Compass just worrying, thinking, when is this going to fall apart? How can we make payroll? How are we going to get new clients? How are we going to complete this project? And I realized after a few years that I wasn't really playing to win. I was playing not to lose. And I got really serious about trying to defeat worry and taking my thoughts captive. And I read some good books about it too, which really helped. But I realized that just because a negative thought enters your mind doesn't mean you need to entertain it. Thoughts are just words and pictures, and they're not reality. And you are not your mind. Your mind sometimes is your biggest enemy. Your mind just naturally will grab the negative. And so sometimes we'll just let our minds run wild and think, what if this negative thing happened? What if this happened? You know, and it spirals. But it's not very often that we let our minds run wild and we think, wow, what if this positive thing happened? And so I'm trying to do that more now. And I've really become a lot better about it. And am I 100% worry-free? I don't know that I'm 100% worry-free, but I don't worry very often anymore. And I think that's really helped a lot. You become what you think about.
I love that as a principle. Also, it reminds me of a running joke my wife and I have that worry is super effective because all the things you worry about never happen.
Fear is an acrostic for false evidence appearing real. False evidence appearing real. And I think that's really true. You're right. Most of the things we fear, 90, 95% of the things we worry about and fear never happen.
Yeah, they never happen. And it's a joke my wife and I have because, you know, it's hard to stop worrying. But at the same time, there's better things you can do with your mind work than worry about things that are never going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I said, it's a joke, but it's a joke with a meaning. And the meaning is, hey, we should stop taking our time and worrying and start instead dreaming and playing and seeing what the possibilities are, because it's the same effort, right? Same brain effort that you can put into something that's actually going to help you grow as opposed to keep you on the defensive. And so I like that a lot. And yeah, I haven't figured it out entirely yet. I know that it's possible to completely remove worry, but I have a little life philosophy. I call it, give yourself permission to play. And it just falls into sort of every category of your life. How are you planning your business? How are you planning your thought? It's okay to do things like, you know, one of the things my wife and I do, we have no particular desire to go and move into a mansion or anything, but we'll go on, like, when we're in ritzy parts of the country, as we travel, we'll go to like the open houses and the big mansions and just go look at them, see what it looks like there. Cause it's like, hey, I want to build a business that could potentially support something like that, even if it's not something I'm interested in. And it's just in that realm of like, hey, how are we playing and playing big and playing a big business? And we do the same thing with, hey, you know, what does it look like? How do I get a business to the point where I could put in 2 hours a day and get 10 times as much effort out of it, right? As much output, right? And so they're all just exercises in your mind of like, how do we think bigger, think different, think better than what other people are? And one of my mastermind members does the same thing. She has a question that she asks us like every other week. Whatever you're working on now, can we do it for 10 times less cost and get 10 times the output for it? And what does that look like? And it's a mental exercise of doing exactly what you're talking about, of just playing more on putting your mind effort into something other than worrying about, are we going to make payroll this week?
Yeah, I like that. That's great. Absolutely. Yeah. Entertain some thoughts about things that could go right. Yeah. Exciting opportunities.
Yeah. What would it look like if you had 10 months of payroll in the bank, right? Rather than, I can't make payroll this month.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap our interview, but I do finish every interview with a simple challenge I call the Heroes Challenge. And I do this to help get access to stories that we might not otherwise find on our own, because not everyone's out doing the podcast rounds like you or I might do. So question is this, do you have someone in your life or in your network that you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us here on the Hero Show? First person that comes to mind for you.
Tom Clegg is the first guy that comes to mind because he has a great story. He's really helped be a mentor of mine. He's given me a lot of guidance and advice over the years. He's a business coach and he's a really amazing guy. And he runs his own consultant business. So yeah, he's really fascinating and very wise and knowledgeable. And sometimes, you know, I'm trying to steal his wisdom from him. But yeah, I love running into people like that who just have wisdom. Very inspiring.
Awesome. Well, I'll see if we can reach out and maybe get an introduction to Tom and get him on the show. They don't always say yes, but when they do, we get cool interviews out of it. So in comic books, there's always the crowd of people who are cheering and clapping for the acts of heroism. So our analogous to that here on this show is Where can people find you if they want your help in the future? And I think more importantly than where is who are the right types of businesses to reach out and say, hey, you know what, we need some help with our digital marketing. And I think Blue Ocean would be a good fit for us.
So you can go to our website, which is bluecompass.com. That's bluecompass.com. If you want to get a hold of me, check out my book, like you said. I do a lot of speaking gigs and things like that. I speak on leadership and company culture. My website is drewharden.com. That's H-A-R-D-E-N, drewharden.com. And both Blue Compass and Drew Harden, everywhere, all over social, everywhere, every platform you can think of. So check us out.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on, Drew. I really appreciate hearing your story today. Do you have any final words of wisdom for our audience with this stop record button?
No, I just appreciate the time, Richard. Thanks a lot for having me.
Awesome. Thank you for being here, Drew.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.